RadioInfluence.com.
When you are looking for the best Bucs coverage, why not go to someone who's actually been on the field?
B-U-C-C-A-N-E-E-R-S. Go Bucs!
This is the only podcast for the Buccaneers by a Buccaneer. You are in the trenches with former Buccaneers offensive lineman Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
Hello, everybody. This is Ian Beckles, and welcome back to In the Trenches. It's an odd victory Monday that we're going to have today. It's been a long time since the Buccaneers were in the winner's circle, but the Buccaneers got it done yesterday against the Jets at home. At the beginning of the year, wouldn't say that that would be a big victory, but it's good to get off the schneid, that's for sure. Watching that game yesterday, one thing that I learned as an athlete, you know, when you play a game, win or lose, you still have to be critical. That's essential because I think we all know as Buccaneer fans that that Buccaneer team yesterday, offensively, can probably just beat the Jets at home, and that's the only team. I mean, there's not many teams are going to beat with that offense. They're just not going to. And at home, I expect more from my offense, regardless who the quarterback is. But, you know, we're going to enjoy the Buccaneer victory because it's been a while. You can't start a winning streak without getting one. But we're still going to be critical. Well, I'm going to still be critical because in a lot of facets of that game, it wasn't close to being good enough, not even remotely close. There are some parts of that game where they played as well as they've played in a couple of years defensively. But you got to kind of take it all with a grain of salt because it's the Jets. It's Josh McCown, who, by the way, had been playing good football. But we're going to have to shut down better quarterbacks than Josh McCown as we move forward. You know, we still have to mess with Drew Brees and all those guys coming up again and Cam Newton again and the Falcons again a couple times. So there's a lot going on. And we're going to have to play better all around than we did yesterday to keep on winning, okay, because it's gonna get harder than that. Now, after watching that game, you got to give grades to the offense. You got to give grades to the defense, individually, special teams, coaching, the whole nine yards. Offensively, their grade will get a D. Okay, offensively, we didn't do squat yesterday. Now, that's the first time that this Buccaneer offense came out against a 3-4 defense. It doesn't seem like a big deal, but it can cause a lot of problems. It really can. The 3-4 defense, you know, it changes the angles of a lot of the blocking schemes, and it puts linemen in kind of some peculiar situations. Most defenses run a 4-3. I mean, I used to like to play against a 3-4 defense because in a lot of passing downs, you're uncovered, and sometimes your man will be a linebacker and he won't blitz. So then you could just kind of go and help and take shots at other linemen. So that's fun. When you're playing a 4-3 defense, you know, as a guard, you usually have a defensive tackle right on your nose. So you're going to be blocking one-on-one all day long. So there's no plays off. But that 3-4 defense gave the Buccaneers problems yesterday. Running the football, that first of all, I said this about Doug Martin before. I just think he's a player. He's just a guy. And I think we have a bunch of guys at running back. We just don't have – there's still some special running backs out there. We don't have one. There's a couple times yesterday where, you know, Doug Martin makes a person miss. I mean, it's a big play. But I'm not seeing it. Doug Martin got his butt kicked yesterday. They were tossing him around the field. He just looked small yesterday. I don't know why. I don't know if it's because the Jets are big. I don't know if it's because we were getting manhandled up front. And we were getting manhandled up front a little bit yesterday. The Jets got some big, mean-ish defensive linemen. I know on the inside, a nose guard was giving Ali Marpet some problems. Donovan Smith usually struggles. And it just wasn't that pretty inside as an offensive line. So offensively, we get a D. We don't run the ball well at all. We protect okay. Fitzpatrick actually got the offense out of a couple different situations where it could have been sacks. There was drop balls out there. I don't find Humphreys to be nearly the same player he's been in the past. He's had a bunch of drops, and he's supposed to be the guy with the best hands on the team. Dropped one early yesterday that, you know, could have caused them a situation. DeSean Jackson, still have to hit him on that bomb. He may have had him once or twice yesterday. Still haven't hit that. But I can't blame DeSean Jackson for anything. Now, offensive line-wise, not good enough. Tight end play, I mean, O.J. Howard, it's time. Because, you know, when you pick a guy that high, and us as fans, now, mostly you as fans, I understand that when you bring a person in as a rookie, 98% of the time, they don't really contribute like you want them to. When you put a rookie into a lineup, you don't normally get better. They have to be rookies for a while. And, you know, it's a little bit of a spit in the face when you have the tight end on the other end of the field, and Austin Seferian Jenkins, who, by the way, I was never a fan of. I still think he's soft. He's a good pass catcher. He's a big old target. And he has to have close to 40 catches this year. I haven't looked up O.J. Howard's, you know, statistics, but I'd be shocked if he had more than 10 catches. So it's getting to the point now where we have to figure out a way to get him in part of this offense. And look, if you're a tight end and you can get open, we shouldn't be running special scheme plays for you to get big plays. And O.J. Howard so far this year has only got big plays when it was schemed. Like, you don't see him running those great routes and the quarterback hit him, you know, in stride. I've not seen that yet. So there's a lot of people that need to step up a lot more as we go forward. Like Ryan Fitzpatrick, I just think what we saw yesterday is what we're going to get. You have to play great defense or you're probably going to lose. Because, you know, that wasn't a well-oiled machine we saw offensively yesterday at all. At all. And Jameis is on the sideline. Mike Evans on the sideline for bonehead reasons, and he deserved to get suspended. Jameis, they sat down for 2 weeks, and I remember my third year in the league when Sam Weitz was our coach, our new coach, and I hurt my knee in the offseason, and I ended up finding out I had another condition in my knee, so I missed the first 6 weeks of the season. But I was in every meeting. I went to every practice. I did all my notes. I would sit there at all the meetings, and I would almost act like a coach for the first before training camp and for the first 6 weeks of the season. And I'm going to tell you what, Jameis sitting out for a couple weeks is going to make him a better football player. It usually does. It usually makes you sit back and look at some of the little details that maybe he's been missing. Maybe let him see how important the footwork is. There was a couple times yesterday where Fitzpatrick's footwork wasn't very good. So sometimes when you're on the outside looking in, it's easier to absorb some things. So I think Jameis, you know, sitting on the sideline, you know, with a clipboard, is going to learn a lot in the next couple weeks. And you learn about the play calling and the little things and decision making. You know, they showed a statistic yesterday that Fitzpatrick gets the ball out of his hand at 2.45 seconds, and Jameis takes 2.8, I believe it was. Doesn't seem like a big number, but that's a long time. And Fitzpatrick is to the point now, as a veteran player, he knows where he's going to go before Jameis does. But Jameis is just learning. He's still learning. And I've said this in the past. I could almost hear Jameis thinking at times. And now, you know, I had this discussion with quite a few people about Jameis and his future and how this season's going to go. This is my mentality. If you have your franchise quarterback on your team and he's healthy, he's got to go. Because sitting him down is not making your team better. Playing him, whether he's playing good or bad, that's making your team better. He still has to go through some growing pains. He still has to. And playing Ryan Fitzpatrick is not helping your organization go in the right direction. It's just not. And then I hear this. Well, the Bucs should lose the rest of their game so they have a high draft pick. Well, okay, say the Bucs end up being 3-13 and they get a high draft pick. Do you think they're going to be in better shape than if they go 7-9 and they get a draft pick 5 spots lower? You have to learn to win in the NFL. And just going out and getting your head smashed in every week and then just getting a good draft pick doesn't equate to winning the next year. The Bucks have to figure out what winning is all about, and they still haven't. They haven't yet. Now, that win yesterday is a nice win. Definitely not enough for you to look at and say, well, this team has turned anything around. Definitely not. They still didn't play well enough for me to think that, you know, they can go on the road and really beat anybody, to be honest with you. Now, let's get to the defense. Now, grade-wise, defensively, you got to give them an A-minus. Got to give them an A-minus. And I would have given them an A until they gave up that touchdown at the end. And didn't end up being a big deal. It seemed to have been a big deal on the bench because Quan Alexander and Ayers were going at it. I don't know what they were bickering about. I don't know what they're fighting about. I don't mind the passion. I don't mind people going at it on the sideline. That means you care. There's been a couple games where looking on the sideline and people have that long face and you're questioning whether these guys give a crap or not. So seeing these guys fight is okay for me. They're going to be fine. I think they both want the same thing. Defensively, they get an A-. I thought they rushed the passer as well as they have all year. Gerald McCoy probably played his third acceptable game of the year. He plays in spurts. If you listen to this podcast from the beginning, I said Gerald McCoy will prey on a weak offensive line, and the Jets have a weak offensive line. Now, statistically, he still didn't do a whole lot, but he was wreaking some havoc yesterday. I give credit where credit is due. Statistically, he still didn't get that much, but there was a couple times where his pressure led to sacks from other people, and I would still like to see him make some more plays on the run, but when he plays like that, I can't complain. And, you know, I can't complain when I see, you know, the Bucks get 5 sacks in a game and, you know, make a quarterback uncomfortable, because that's probably the second quarterback this year that we've made uncomfortable. And it's hard to win if a quarterback's standing back there. It's really, really hard. From what I heard from the broadcast, I guess the Bucks defense got together, or they watched film last week of the Saints game as a group. And they sat down as a group, and they were critical as a group. And one of the things that everybody was questioning was the work ethic and the effort level. Now, you can't be a great defense without effort level. And against the Saints, I said this, there were some guys laying it down. There were some guys that just didn't want to be there. And yesterday looked like it was a bunch of guys having fun. And, you know, success makes things a lot more fun. That's for sure. It was good to see them start beating some people up front. And that's been a long, long time since that's been coming. It was good to see the kicking game come around. Patrick Murray had a good game. Those are other things that were definitely questionable along the way. I thought Grimes had a great game up until that last drive and giving up that touchdown, and, you know, it happens, but I thought he played well. Other than that, I thought Hargraves played well for the most part. Our linebackers are just good. Quan, I think, looks like he's healthy again. Quan, forced fumble, made a couple plays flying around the field. Lavonte David putting hats on people. And the Beckwith kid is a keeper. I like him. He's got a good attitude. But that was at one side of the ball. And the other side of the ball, offensively, you know, 97 yards in the first half and 39 yards rushing. We all know that's not nearly good enough. The offensive line has to start taking over some games. Like, they won that game, you know, despite really looking awful for 3/4 of the game. You know, when you look at the field position that the Bucks had in the first half, the Bucks' average start was the 41-yard line in the first half. Their average drive started at the 41-yard line. It seemed like the Jets were punting out of their end zone all first half. So if your average start is a 41-yard line, you got to come out of the half with more than 6 points. You have to. You have to. I mean, 2 first downs, that's in field goal range. So that definitely has to improve. They got to figure out a way to run the ball more effectively. after Grimes had that great interception in that first half, and that was pretty. That was a pretty interception. You know, you can't come out and, you know, throw a pick after that. Okay, those are little things that will get you eventually. There were short fields. I mean, Quan gave him a short field in the first half. Reedy gave him a short field in the first half, and he got 6 points. It's not good enough offensively. Not even close. And, you know, still getting the questions. What happened if Fitzgerald plays well in next game? What's good? Jameis is the quarterback. If Jameis is healthy, Jameis is a quarterback. Fitzpatrick's not the future. We understand that. Now, Sims, who I don't really love as a running back, is a great addition when used properly. Running out of the backfield, he's not a very instinctive running back, but I thought Dirk Koetter did a great job of play calling when he got that touchdown of, you know, creating some mismatches out there. And Sims can run. He's fast. Out of the backfield, he's going to be real tough for a linebacker to cover. So it's good to see Sims being used in the right way. But there's still other pieces of this offense that need to figure out a way to come together, utilizing the tight end. I would think that Fitzpatrick would have used the tight end a little bit more than he has to this point, but it doesn't seem to be happening. I would think Cameron Brate would have a bigger game than he did. But they're starting to try to put pieces together offensively. It just hasn't come together all at the same time. There's a couple of games where the Bucs ran the ball okay. There's a couple of games where, you know, the quarterbacks played better. But there's always something missing, it seems like. Now, defensively, I thought Chris Baker had a couple plays, which you really haven't heard much of him this year. Then he went out with the injury, then came back and really had a ticky-tack, I thought, roughing the passer, unnecessary roughness towards the end of the game, which led to them scoring their touchdown. And it would have been really nice if they'd have stopped the Jets from scoring a touchdown. I think that would have been cool. I mean, for them, that would have been a good feel for them. But it was nice to see all the linebackers show up and some. Those guys were running around the football field, and these guys were playing with some energy. But the reason why I can't give the defense an A, and I wanted to give the defense an A, trust me, I can't give them an A because, you know, when at the end of the game, the Bucs get the ball with 2 minutes and 30 seconds left. And at that point, you know, the Jets have 3 points. When you get the ball back with 2 minutes and 30 seconds, that's when the offensive line has to get together and go, let's win the game. Let us win the game. At that, with 2 minutes and 30 seconds, and the Jets have two timeouts, one first down, the game's over. And the Bucs ran the ball three times for like 3 yards total, punted the ball back to the Jets. You can't punt the ball back to the Jets at that time. You got to win the game on the field. You punt it back to the Jets, they get a touchdown, and now all of a sudden the game's not over. So there's still a lot of things that can be, you know, cleaned up. As a defense, you don't want to give up that last touchdown. You don't want to do that. When the Bucs were great, you had no chance of driving the ball down the field at the end of the game and scoring against the Bucs way back when they were great. It's not now. Although the defense played great yesterday, I would not call them great. What's really hard is, you know, looking around the league and seeing all the players excelling on other teams especially, and not so much this Austin Seferian-Jenkins. I think he had to go. I think he's a bonehead. And he's going to blow up eventually. He's going to do something stupid, and he's going to mess himself up. I just don't think he's a very intelligent person. But when you look around the league and you see Aqib Talib still leading, you know, on defense, and you're watching Michael Bennett, and then we got to watch Adrian Claiborne yesterday. Adrian Claiborne, you remember that name? Former first rounder. Borderline bust here. He didn't really do anything. Really didn't. By the way, he's playing for the Falcons, and he had 6 sacks yesterday. Adrian Claiborne had 6 sacks by himself yesterday. Sometimes it's hard to watch that. It really is. So it was a well-needed win, okay? Period. Now the Bucs have to go to Miami, play the Dolphins. I mean, I'll be damned if there's a winnable road game. That's a winnable road game. You know, Buccaneers still haven't proven to me or really anybody that they're good enough to win on the road. They haven't proven it yet. This will be a good start. Just get a little streak going, and you never know what could happen. Then Jameis comes back, and what I'm saying, never know what could happen is just put a couple wins together, and crazy things happen at times. Like, your defense could all of a sudden feel like Hercules, and they could win games by themselves, and then crazy things can happen down the way. But Dirk Cutter's got to have to keep these guys together. Like, Dirk Cutter, I'm not going to say saved his job yesterday, but you lose to the Jets at home, and, you know, you go 2-7, I know for sure the media was going to ask for his ass. That's for sure. And it's getting to a point where, you know, Buccaneer fans that are going to the stadium, and I've talked to a few people that were there yesterday, you know, it's almost, you know, people really want to go to watch offensive football. That's why they change all these rules. And offensively, they're like, it's like a bad concert. It's like a bad concert right now. And I thought the stands were, you know, a little empty yesterday. Didn't look like it was too many Jets fans out there. But it's just not a great concert right now. There was a time where the Bucks were, you know, U2. You go to the Bucks game, and there's people everywhere, and there's people having fun, and everything's electricity, and there's not nearly that much anymore. It's going to take a little bit to get back there. It really is. And people go to get entertained. And there was a time, if you remember, it's not that long ago, you know, when you talk about, you know, the eras of Josh Freeman, although Josh had a little bit of success, but there was other times where offensively they used to look a lot like they did yesterday. And yesterday, offensively, it wasn't pretty. They won't win another game looking like that offensively. I'm going to make that prediction. And they got some tough games coming up. And if you think you're going to beat the Falcons or Carolina or the Saints by scoring 15 points, it's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen. You're not going to stop Drew Brees to 15 points. The Saints just throttled the Bills yesterday. And the Saints run the football effectively. The Saints take care of the ball. The Saints get big plays. And the Saints are starting to play a better defense as well. So this thing is not going to get any easier as we go along. So suck it in. Enjoy it. Absorb it. That was a win yesterday. A win's a win. It's going to be good at the end of the year. Doesn't matter. A win against New England is the same against a win against the Jets at the end of the year. But what is it going to establish? What is it going to equate to? Really, we just won a sloppy game in the middle of a sloppy year. But let's put something together. Now Dirk Cutter has to prove that he has a hold of this team, because there's been a couple times this year where it looks like he's kind of lost the grasp of the team. And I'm not talking about players fighting at the end of the game. I like that. There's a little questioning going on. There's a questioning of play calling, question of systems and stuff like that. And to me, that means you don't have the right players if you have people questioning what you're trying to get accomplished. So let's build on this. There's definitely, I think defensively, when we go to Miami, it's going to be a different feel because, you know, we hadn't really stopped anybody prior, you know, to yesterday, especially on third down. I mean, I think we were the worst third down defense in the NFL. So some of that was turned around yesterday. They got to the passer a little bit yesterday, 5 sacks. That's wonderful. They had 8 in the previous 8 games. So things are looking up defensively. Offensively, we still got some work. It's still a work in progress. We saw some high-priced, you know, high-profile players that we have to get a little bit more involved in what's going on out there. But I'm going to commend Dirk Cutter for having the kids fight, because they fought yesterday. It wasn't always pretty, but when you play hard and you play with effort, crazy things happen, you get wins. So as long as Buccaneers remember that going into Miami, and it's got to be a mindset from now on. It's early, but I got a funny feeling they go to Miami and win. It's not like Miami are world beaters. I'm not a huge Jay Cutler fan. I don't know if he had any. I don't know if I have any. I know anybody with less leadership skills. And you know the Miami Dolphins are just a team that at the beginning of the season we believed we were better than and that we should win. If Mike Evans was out there yesterday, I think we're a different football team. Mike Evans is a difference maker, no doubt. It's his fault he got suspended. It's our fault that he wasn't out there. But with him, we're a different football team. I don't know if we have 97 yards offense at the beginning in the first half if Mike Evans is out there. And also, everybody's role will diminish a little bit because he's going to get his touches and he's going to get his targets. And as far as Fitzpatrick goes, a win is good. A win is good. But there's going to be times where it's going to have to be way, way, way prettier than that. That's for sure. Now, I do two podcasts. I also have a podcast, Flavor in Your Ear, that comes out Friday morning or Friday afternoon-ish. This is In the Trenches. This is where I just talk football. If you guys were, you know, tuning in to hear pop culture and all those kind of things, this ain't the one. If you guys want to contact me, you can check me out at Ian Beckles at Radio Influence if you guys have any questions. And I know I like to answer football questions and like to talk to my people as well. From what I hear, the numbers are really good for In the Trenches. So thank you for listening. And, you know, I hope that the numbers are good and everybody's celebrating this victory on its Victory Monday for a while. Absorb it. Once Tuesday comes, you got to forget about that win and start worrying about the Miami Dolphins and figure out ways we can beat those jokers. So everybody, enjoy the win all day long, and let's hope the Buccaneers can get two in a row. I appreciate you guys listening in. It's been wonderful. Congratulations to the Buccaneers, and let's hope we can start winning with you and celebrating a little bit more. Have a wonderful week, and please be safe. Peace out.
Follow Ian Beckles on Twitter at Ian Beckles for all the latest on your Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You have been in the trenches with Ian Beckles on Radio Influence. This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer, Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I'm assuming that you watched it, and I'm wondering what you thought, because as somebody who's a longtime fan and a huge Ric Flair fan, I'm wondering what you thought, because I lived it. I mean, there's nothing that was in there that surprised me. It surprised me that certain people said it out loud and that they aired it, but nothing in there that surprised me as far as that goes. So I'm wondering, as a fan, what were your thoughts?
I love the candidness that Rick spoke with. You know, I loved obviously hearing, and I have obviously known his career for a long time as far as, you know, where he had gone, the promotions, the territories. But I think the part that at least hit with me really hard was the personal life. You know, to hear his kids talk on camera, for him to openly admit, you know, he just wasn't home all the time. And You know that happens with wrestlers a lot. You know, they talk about being on the road 300 days a year, and they're just not around. It's just the nature of the line of work they're in. But to hear his kids speak and to hear about, you know, he was bored being home. He would head over to another wrestler's house to hang out for a while. But just to hear the family side of it, to hear the humanistic side of it, and to finally hear that the Ric Flair persona, it really became too much for him to walk away from. I mean, you know, the family life in some ways wasn't for him in the early going. So I love the human interest side of it. But Rick's a candid guy. I mean, you know him probably just as well as anybody. But I loved it. I loved it. I don't know if I could necessarily pick out one aspect that I liked the best about it. But I think overall it was such a well done piece. And I think it was really neat that they did two part interview with him, meaning interview him in a one time. And then 16 months later, they went ahead and they did a second interview with him. So I loved it. I have nothing to bark about. And all the emotion was in there. Did you feel that as well, that it wasn't just a story, but it was this person's life that they had lived, and all these people around them were there because they had shared moments with him?
Yeah, I mean, Rick's an emotional guy. We all know that. And, you know, Rick is far from perfect, as he said himself. And that's the part that I wonder as a fan. Of course, with social media and the internet, you know, fans know way more now than they did back, you know, in the 80s and 90s. But I'm wondering, as a fan, you know, somebody who walked down the aisle of their wedding wanting to wear a Ric Flair robe with belts, and we're not going to relive that. But I'm just trying to point out that that's how much of a fan you were. I'm wondering if it disappointed you that he's a real person with some real big flaws.
I mean, I think when you look at that side of it, you know going into it that you're right. No one's perfect, and that he can admit to that as well. Were there some aspects that I kind of was like, I don't know if I necessarily align myself with as far as family values and whatnot? Yeah, of course. Absolutely. When it came to the topic of monogamy, I kind of cringed a little bit. But once again, he lives his life the way he does. I live the life the way I do. Just because you don't see eye to eye on every necessarily moral stance, it doesn't mean that you can't still respect people. As far as I'm concerned, I don't see anybody that Rick has gone out of his way to hurt, if that makes sense. I know things might not have always worked out relationship-wise, but it never feels like people are outwardly angry towards him. Does that make sense? I really feel like everybody kind of for the most part is just, that's Rick.
I think that they did for a long time. I think as he got into his 60s and got older and he still continued with the shenanigans, I think that a lot of people, I know that a lot of people started rolling their eyes. There's a time in someone's life where they have to sort of be, stop being a character and move to the next phase of your life. And I think until he almost died, quite frankly, I don't think he was able to do that.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.